Hamilton.
I'm in my hand and command and my men with me. Gotta go, gotta get the job done, gotta start a new nation. Gotta...
All right. I could let that go on for a long time because I really, really like that musical. Hamilton is opening up at the Sanger tomorrow night. I got tickets for tomorrow night. They weren't particularly easy to get, but, you know, I found a way. So listen, tickets are, look, they're not cheap. And I know a lot of people want to probably go see this play and they're probably not going to whip out their wallet to pay, you know, $80 for one seat. And I asked the Sanger this morning, I said, you know, which performances, there are 16 performances of Hamilton, which performances have the most available seats? And they wrote me back and they said there are only singles available. So if you want to go see Hamilton by yourself or you want to send a friend or a loved one to go see Hamilton by themselves, I'm sure they would still love that, especially if they're a fan. But the great news, there's a ticket lottery where you can get tickets for only $10. And all you have to do is use the official Hamilton app. Just get into the app store on your smartphone, Apple or Android, and go get the Hamilton app. And then every Friday at 10 o'clock, they're going to open up that lottery. You can jump in there and see if you can get yourself an opportunity to buy one of those $10 tickets. So I expect the lottery for this week's performances, the performances tonight, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, are cooked. But go ahead and get that app now so that when Friday morning at 10 o'clock rolls around, you can enter for a chance to win an opportunity to buy a $10 ticket to Hamilton. Very exciting. On the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking text line, there is a text here that says, oh, this is from Rusty. Let's see. Rusty says, let's keep the same energy going for every SMG arena, any venue in the country for that matter. For instance, the Smoothie King Center. When you buy a ticket from them through Ticketmaster, they charge you 30% on each ticket. This is crazy, considering that the promoter already pays for the arena, all the security, all the rigging, all everything at this arena for everybody that has anything to do with the event. You can't even bring people from outside to do anything. You have to use their people. The average cost is $300,000 per event. Then you mean to tell me that on top of that, they make over $500,000 on 30% of all ticket sales? This was a way bigger problem a few years back. It was only 8% then. It's 15%. Now it's 30%. When will it ever stop? Rusty brings up a good point. And like I did draw this kind of difference earlier on. You know, if you want to resell something that you've already spent money for, you know, it sucks that concert tickets are expensive, but that's just the world that we're living in. Like, we've been doing that. That's the bedrock of commerce. That's the bedrock of capitalism. You buy low and you sell high. My beef with this reservation thing is that you're now making something very expensive that used to not cost any money at all. And as soon as it becomes optional for people to buy that, effectively, then it becomes mandatory for people to buy that. So maybe you want to pay $2,000 to reserve a table at Antoine's, which is fine. If you want to do that, okay. But the real problem is, once that becomes available for you to do, the scale of the technology makes it compulsory for me to do it. I don't want to have to pay $2,000 to reserve a table, but because you want to do it and you have the ability to go reserve every single table every single night at every single restaurant in town, if you wanted. I mean, that's technically going to be a pretty tricky thing to pull off, but it's not impossible. Well, then I'm screwed. Then I have to pay the $2,000, and I don't think that you should have to do that. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, in the previous hour, we spoke to Wes Muller from the Louisiana Illuminator about these reservation apps. Appointment Trader is one. Dorsia is another. It was a great conversation. That's available now at WWL.com. And the Odyssey app. If you want to go back and listen to that, you can listen to the on-demand podcast, or you can do it on Rewind. We're going to speak in a few moments here to Jeremy Rosenthal, who's a legal expert, about this fellow from Maryland who is a Venezuelan national, but he had legal protected status in the United States. He did it the right way. You know, he was married. He's still married. He's got three kids, lived in Maryland, had a job, had a family. You know, yada, yada. But then the Trump administration deported him. And they said that that was a mistake and they should not have deported him. Okay, people make mistakes, but now they're refusing to bring him back. And it seems like they're offended at the idea that they should even try to bring him back. So we'll talk to Jeremy Rosenthal in a few minutes about that. And then at 3 o'clock, after the markets close on the East Coast, we will talk a little bit about the economy, where things are headed, where we've been, etc. But you know, right now it's time. Coleman, light it up. Let's do the news bomb. Our lead story in the 2 o'clock news bomb today, Chief Justice John Roberts at the United States Supreme Court has paused a deadline for the return of this Maryland man who was mistakenly deported to El Salvador.
Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts paused a deadline for the return of a Maryland man mistakenly deported to El Salvador. A federal judge has ordered the administration to return Kilmar Abrego Garcia. The Justice Department went to the Supreme Court saying the judge was overstepping her authority. The administration has conceded Abrego Garcia should not have been sent to El Salvador because an immigration judge found he likely would have faced persecution by local gangs, but argued he's no longer in U.S. custody and the government has no way to get him back. The White House has described Abrego Garcia's deportation as an administrative error, but has said he was an MS-13 gang member. Attorneys for Abrego Garcia say there's no evidence he was in MS-13. He has never been convicted of any crime. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Now, they say that Mr. Garcia was involved with a gang, but they've got no evidence of that. And the guy has never been charged with anything. He's got no criminal record. So the fact that they've deported him and said, oh, he's a member of the MS-13 gang. This is like if your boss comes out and tells you, you've been doing a great job, but we're going to fire you for something you did a decade ago in a dream I had. This cannot possibly be the official policy of the United States of America. Right? I mean, get real. Does anyone believe them when they say, well, there's nothing we can do. We can't go get him back. We're the United States, damn it. You telling me you just get on the phone. Just call up President Bukele. You know, send him some Dogecoin or whatever and tell him to put this guy back on a flight to America. How hard is that? You don't think he's going to do that? You don't think we can push around the president of El Salvador a little bit and get this man returned to his family in the United States? Give me a break, man. So stupid. The Supreme Court has also stepped into the case of whether or not the Trump administration legally fired thousands of federal workers.
The Supreme Court has blocked an order requiring the Trump administration to reinstate thousands of fired federal workers. A federal judge in California had ruled the firings of about 16,000 probationary employees violated federal law and told the administration to reinstate them as a lawsuit played out. The government made an emergency appeal to the High Court, and today's order means those workers at six federal agencies will stay on paid administrative leave for now. The Justice Department is separately challenging another order in Maryland that resulted in an order blocking firings at roughly 18 agencies, though the order only applies in the 19 states and Washington, D.C., which sued the administration. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
This ruling is a win for the Trump administration, but it's not the final word on this. For now, these thousands of probationary employees, they're still in limbo. They're getting their paycheck, which I guess is nice, but I think they'd probably rather have their job if I had to guess. You know, this is like it's like a TV show. It's like a competition. It's like a giant game. You know, who wants to be fired with Regis Philbin, except everybody loses. And meanwhile, the Supreme Court ruling allows the Trump administration to keep these mass firings going. You know, we've already seen this at HHS and all these different agencies, the USAID and all, you know, they're just going through the government with a chainsaw. Will these employees get their jobs back? Tune in next time to find out. It's like a season finale cliffhanger. Why watch Severance when you could watch this? Hey, better keep brushing your pearly whites, speaking of Health and Human Services, because the days of having fluoride in your tap water may be coming to an end.
Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says that he plans to tell the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to stop recommending fluoridation in drinking water, and that he is assembling a task force to focus on the issue. The Environmental Protection Agency has also announced that it is reviewing new scientific information on the potential health risks. Kennedy cannot order communities to stop fluoridation, but he can tell the CDC to stop recommending it and work with the EPA to change the allowed amount. Last month, Utah became the first state to ban fluoride in public drinking water, pushing past opposition from dentists and national health organizations who warned that the move could lead to medical problems that disproportionately affect low-income communities. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
I'm shocked. I couldn't have possibly guessed that one of these policies would disproportionately affect poor people. How did I not see that coming? I don't really care about fluoride either way, I guess. I don't know. We put it in there for a reason. If it makes our children's teeth stronger and there's not, you know, bad side effects after, you know, several generations of having this stuff in our tap water, then, you know, leave it, take it. I don't know. But I tell you what I do know is I don't really trust RFK Jr. and his task force to come at this from a scientific angle. You know what I mean? Seems like a foregone conclusion. He says he's got a task. Oh, everybody can relax. He's got a task force, everybody. The task force is probably going to be, you know, a guy who's like really into crystals, a fired production assistant from Curb Your Enthusiasm, a guy who works out at the same gym as Alex Jones, and it'll all be chaired by RFK Jr.'s brain worm. And naturally, there's no women. China is vowing countermeasures over Trump administration tariffs as a trade war is threatening to intensify.
China says it will fight to the end and take further measures against the U.S. to safeguard its own interests after President Donald Trump threatened an additional 50% tariff on Chinese imports. The Commerce Ministry says the U.S.'s imposition of so-called reciprocal tariffs on China is completely groundless and is a typical unilateral bullying practice. Trump's Monday threat of additional tariffs on China raised fresh concerns that his drive to rebalance the global economy could intensify a financially destructive trade war. Stock markets from Tokyo to New York have become more unstable as the tariff war worsens. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Now, Donald Trump is threatening to raise tariffs to 50%. That is not a tariff. That is an intervention. It's like going over to your friend's house and you look at their broken couch and you say, that couch is terrible. So I'm going to make it 50% more expensive for you. Okay. And finally, we are seeing massive and destructive flooding from severe rainfall in parts of the southern United States.
Residents in Tennessee wade through water with whatever they can carry from their homes. One of many locations in the South flooded from heavy rains and overflowing rivers. Dyersburg resident Kathy Ditto says she's hoping her home is safe.
I got two dogs in there. Not leaving without them. I get real emotional. All this flooded water, starting all over. Think about starting all over.
In Kentucky, National Weather Service meteorologist Samantha Wilson says the state has seen some historic crests along their rivers.
We have had one area reach a record flood, and that's Camp Nelson. They reached a record flood, and in Frankfort is kind of the most impactful flooding we've had right now.
She says the Ohio River should crest in the next few days, bringing flooding to Louisville and western Kentucky. I'm Julie Walker.
There's not really much to joke about here. It's not funny. It's terrible. It's a tragic situation. But it is a good place to mention. It is against this backdrop that we're learning about FEMA and what's going to change at FEMA. FEMA has a program, part of what they do, like I'm telling you something you don't already know. They send billions of dollars to communities, municipalities, and states after disasters, right? But they also have programs that do that proactively before the disaster strikes so that these cities and states can prepare for these events before they hit. Sounds good, right? That's the kind of program we should have, right? That's nope, nope. Oh, we're not. Oh, oh no, we're going to dismantle that program too. Okay, wow. Yeah, the Trump administration is planning to dismantle that program, the sort of proactive preparation disaster work. This is the biggest climate adaptation initiative that the federal government has ever funded. And the inclusion of that word climate, I suspect, is probably why this program is on the chopping block, because, you know, these people see climate anywhere in any part of the federal government. They think it's got to go, like DEI. You know, you got to fire all the women. You got to erase all the black people because reasons. This is the biggest, most helpful program in this regard the federal government has ever funded. And there are hundreds of billions of dollars worth of damage across the United States every year because of hurricanes or wildfires or flooding. And there's always people who say, you know, climate change is happening. It is happening naturally, but it's not because of anything that people do. So we shouldn't change our approach. We shouldn't hobble our economy. We shouldn't change our policies, because the climate's just going to keep changing anyway. Well, fine. Even if that's true, why are we cutting programs that would reduce damage to our communities in the future? The disasters are going to happen whether or not they're man-made or not. But we're going to cut this program. It's almost like it's not based in science at all. Godspeed to all those people in Kentucky and elsewhere affected by the floods. I hope they get the help we need. We'll step away and we'll come back with Jeremy Rosenthal, who's a legal expert, and we will talk more about this fella from Maryland, Mr. Abrego Garcia, who's been deported, and we'll learn about more the strange legal twists to this case and more. If you want to get in touch, shoot me a text, 504-260-1870, or give me a call. I'll be right back after this. 228 here on WWLAMFM.com and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. I'm going to run you through a timeline of events in this case as best as I can. On March 12th, Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia was arrested by ICE after he finished his shift as a sheet metal worker. He's pulled over with his son in the car. There's this big dust up. His wife is warned by DHS to take their son away or they'll get Child Protective Services involved. This family has three children. All three of them have special needs. On March 15th, despite being granted protection from deportation by an immigration judge in 2019, Abrego Garcia is put on a deportation flight to El Salvador, and he ends up in CECOT, which is a notorious high-security prison specifically designed for violent gangs like MS-13. It is an intentionally brutal facility. It's overcrowded by most standards, and they mix up members of rival gangs on purpose, knowing that violence will result. On March 31st, an ICE official files a sworn declaration admitting that the deportation resulted from a, quote, administrative error. That same official stated that although ICE was aware of Mr. Abrego Garcia's legal protection, he was deported anyway due to an oversight. On April 4th, federal judge Polizinas finds that the Trump administration is in clear violation of court orders and orders them to return Abrego Garcia to the U.S. by April 7th. The Trump administration appeals this ruling, sending the case to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. On April 7th, before the Fourth Circuit has a chance to rule, the Justice Department files an emergency application with the Supreme Court requesting a temporary stay of the April 7th deadline. Chief Justice John Roberts has granted that stay, pausing the lower court's deadline while the Supreme Court reviews the case. Some of that is confusing to me. I'm sure some of it is confusing to others as well. But here to help us clear some of that up is a legal expert, Jeremy Rosenthal. Jeremy, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate you making the time.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so the Trump administration admitted a mistake by deporting Mr. Abrego Garcia, even though there was a court ruling saying that he shouldn't be sent to El Salvador. How serious is that mistake from a legal standpoint?
Well, serious enough to result in this man being in a cage on the other side of the world away from his family. Probably once this all gets straightened out, this gentleman's probably going to have a pretty good lawsuit against the government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured.
The
Trump administration says that this man is somehow linked to MS-13, but we haven't really seen any solid proof of that, or at least proof that would fly in a court of law. How often do you see the government make claims like this without showing any evidence? Isn't it important for us to see evidence in a case like this?
Absolutely, and you don't see this at all. What the government is doing is they're invoking what's called the Alien Extradition Act, which has been invoked several times. It's meant for the time of war, and in the past, it does have an infamous history to it. It was the justification in World War II for interning Japanese people in America. It was also used in World War I and World War II. We've heard also that, that Nazis were used. It was to deport Nazis. But the linchpin, as you've already kind of hit on, is due process, right? Number one, I mean, let's just for argument's sake, let's just give the administration the wartime whatever, okay? Mm-hmm. Which that can be confusing, right? Does Congress declare war? Does the president have to wait for September the 12th in order to start using this in other circumstances? Well, let's just give them that. Even if it was a time of war, these people still get due process, right? We don't deport people because we think they're dangerous criminals. We deport them because we prove that they're dangerous criminals. And now this is how we deport people with soccer tattoos and tattoos that we mistake for and administrative errors, putting people in harm's way that a previous judge ruled, look, if you deport this man to El Salvador, it's important enough to keep him in America because he could get hurt, he could get brutalized, he could get killed down there. So it is fundamental that there be some type of check and balance. And if the executive is just going to act in a way that is completely unsupervised, in America, we just don't do the trust us model of government. We're not really okay with that.
Right. Yeah. I that's a nice, concise way of putting that. You know, there's a lot of people across the country who are not sympathetic to this man. And that's fine, I guess, if you want to be that way. But the fact of the matter is, we have laws in this country and we are supposed to give a damn when they are not followed in a case like this. You're afforded due process in this country, no matter what your immigration status is. And it should bother you, whether it's this administration or some other administration, just dead ass ignoring that and then acting offended when the judiciary comes back and says, hey, man, you can't do that.
Well, look, and to put it to you this way, either you believe in the Constitution or you don't.
Yeah.
And the Constitution very clearly, in certain sections, applies to citizens. And that means the right to vote. And in certain instances, it applies to persons. And it has been held very long, and it is very clear jurisprudence over the last 200 plus years that everybody, that means if you are on our soil, regardless of your status, mm-hmm. you are entitled to due process under the Fifth Amendment, under the 14th Amendment,
right.
Under the Sixth Amendment, you're entitled to these rights. And they're not really debatable. And if you're angry about it, don't get angry at the judge, get angry at Thomas Jefferson, right? Get angry at Alexander Hamilton. They were the ones who gave you these Bill of Rights, I suppose. They didn't do the 14th Amendment. That was after their time. So I'll give them a pass on that one. But the Bill of Rights, it applies in most instances to persons. And everybody means everybody. And if you think about it this way, look, what would they do to somebody like this in a country like El Salvador? They would put you in a cage without a hearing, right? And either America is going to be like that or we're not. And that the choice is ours.
Thank you so much for that. Going back to the kind of legal turns here. So the appeals court agreed with the judge's initial decision before the case went to the Supreme Court. What does that tell you, Mr. Rosenthal, about how strong the lower court's ruling was and how might this affect other cases like this?
Well, and to also sort of let you know how close it was, I believe it was stayed at a 5-4 vote.
Yeah.
Meaning that the issue in front of the court yesterday was, does the government have to comply by midnight? That was the issue yesterday. The issue now is not only was this legal, but is there some other date that might work? So I don't think there's any question that the government is in error here. They've admitted as such. The legal issue is now that this person is in El Salvador, can we get him back? Can we legally get him back? Is he subject to our control? Can a judge order the United States of America to bargain for or to somehow retrieve somebody that has been deported in error? I think it's a very close issue, and it's one that probably long term I have a hard time thinking is going to go the way that the government wants it to go. But yes, all of these decisions are going to be very, very close ones. Because these are novel issues. We've not seen them before. And look, I mean, the administration, they dust off this statute from 1798, and maybe it fits and maybe it doesn't. That's what courts do. And we're not, the courts are no strangers to taking really old laws and seeing if they work today.
Yeah.
So I do think that there's a lot to unpack here with these things.
The government is arguing that it doesn't have control over Mr. Abrego Garcia anymore because now he's in El Salvador, right? He's already in the prison. But does that argument hold any water? I mean, can't they just get President Bukele on the phone and say, hey, we sent this guy to you. Can you please send him back? I mean, how hard is that?
I think the court could potentially, and you, that's a great point. The court's jurisdiction, if you will, a United States District Court judge or the Supreme Court, for that matter, it begins right there in Washington, D.C. in the courtroom, and it ends at the authority of the national government. I don't know that our Supreme Court can order the head of state from another country to do something. What they could potentially do is order our government to make some pretty darn good efforts and some good faith efforts to get him back. But to some degree, I mean, and maybe it's a really convenient argument that the administration makes, but to some degree, they're right. If legally we can't, if the Supreme Court can't order a foreign entity to do something, then our government's abilities are likewise limited.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. So there are some people like me who are looking at the government's behavior in front of these assorted courts. And I got to wonder if this is just an intentional violation of the law, you know, because if they just make a mistake and say, oops, it was an administrative error that we accidentally sent this guy who had legal protected status. We accidentally deported him. Our bad. We're going to do everything we can to bring him back. Okay, you know, people make mistakes, but clearly you're, you know, operating in some sort of good faith here. But the fact that they've done the complete opposite of that makes me wonder if they just did this on purpose. And if that's the case, what does that mean when the government does something like that? What are the potential consequences there?
Well, it's certainly not healthy. And there's been a lot of rhetoric. There's been a lot of court bashing, and there's been a lot of judge bashing over these things. And that's not healthy for the rule of law. It's important in this country that we believe in our judges, and not just for this. Right. I mean, this is on the legal landscape is a 0.00001% issue. It's important when a judge tells you that your ex-wife has to give the kids back over the weekend.
Yeah.
It's important. Or the judge says, you better not drink while you're on probation. Or if a judge says, I'm going to rule that this contract is null and void. It's important that the people in front of that judge believe it. I don't get to go tell a judge, or I don't get to tell my client, rather, look, you can keep the kids on the weekend. This judge is a jerk and nobody likes him. Can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that, right? And I might be right. The judge may not be anywhere in the world. But that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. And to your point, the administration has certainly been flirting with some type of contempt of the local judges. Now, are these paper cut infractions intentionally calculating? Well, this one we can kind of push off. I mean, it's all fun and games. The rules are until the U.S. Supreme Court is defied. That's not been done, and I don't know that that will be done. But that's when I think you're going to see the real test of this administration is what happens. It's okay for you to mock Judge Boasberg or some other Obama appointee. It's John Roberts telling you something, or Brett Kavanaugh or Amy Coney Barrett telling you to do something.
Right.
What are you going to do? That's a great question.
I guess they're going to impeach them. I don't know. I keep seeing, you got to impeach all these judges for doing their job. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I don't think it's supposed to. All right, last one, Jeremy. If the Supreme Court rules that Mr. Obrego Garcia should be brought back to the United States, is that going to set a precedent that we'll see referred to in future situations? Like, could this lead to changes in the way that deportations are handled broadly, especially like this case, where it seems really clear that this person's legal rights were ignored or violated?
I think in this circumstance, I think that you're definitely going to see that the courts are going to say, look, government, you're going to have to provide some due process, even under this Alien Extradition Act. If you're going to get green-lighted here, then you can't just ship people off in the middle of the night and not tell anybody about it. That's not going to work. Mm-hmm. There's going to have to be some due process here. So I do think, yes, I do think that this will take a different shape or form going forward.
Great. We better pause there. Jeremy Rosenthal is a legal expert at a Dallas-based law firm. Man, thank you so much for making time today. We had a great conversation. Thanks for your time, your work, and your way. Good luck out there, man.
Enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jeremy. Jeremy Rosenthal, there he goes. We'll be back with more of your comments from the Okunart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. I got a couple people on hold. Stick around. I'll get to you as fast as I can. And I'm a little bit backed up on reading some of your text messages. I'll find some time to do that as well. Ian Hoken for Scoot. 249 here on WWL. I'm going to read a couple texts. Here's one that says, when they came here illegally, they broke the law. Okay, now Mr. Obrego Garcia was 16 years old, and he did enter the United States illegally, and he ought not have done that, but he did, and then he got temporary protected status, and maybe you don't like that, or you think the system should change, but it is what it is, man. He had legal status in the United States, and he should not have been deported, but to the texter's point about, you know, when they came here illegally, they broke the law. I'm sorry that he broke the law, but we still have the Constitution. Just because somebody breaks the law doesn't mean we suddenly just like give up on the system of, you know, checks and balances and due process and the 6th and the 14th Amendment, all these different things that we have that make America great. We don't just give up on that because somebody broke the law and came across the border illegally when they were a teenager. I'm sorry. We can and must do better than that. Texter says, I care about the Constitution, but the people that came here illegally, do they care about it? I don't care what they care about. Them caring about the United States Constitution is not a requisite for me caring about it. I'm going to care about it whether they do or not. I don't really give a damn what they think about it. If they break the law, there should be consequences for that. If they apply for protected status and they get it, it should be respected. This isn't that complicated. But some people really want to make it complicated. It doesn't have to be. Here's another text that says, Ian, I understand your concern about this. However, the way I see it is if he has this protected status, he knew he could never go back to his country, and he was here for over 5 years. Why didn't he take steps to become a citizen? And that's an excellent question. And thank you, texter, for bringing that up. I don't know. I don't know. And it may not be knowable. There might not be a fast answer for that. You know, applying for citizenship isn't cheap. It's not free. Immigration law is really, really complicated. Navigating that system can be a difficult and lengthy process if there's financial constraints or language barriers. I mean, there's lots of reasons that this guy did not apply for citizenship. Even long-term residents may not have a clear route to citizenship if they're in the country under a status that does not lead to a permanent residency, like a green card. So you and I can sit here and think, he really should have done that. But the circumstances of this man's life, he didn't. And I don't know if you think that that makes him an evildoer, you know, so be it. But at the end of the day, it doesn't totally matter. He had protected status. He was not supposed to be deported. ICE admitted that they deported him, that there was a mistake for them to do that. Everything else is just lanyap, y'all. That is the meat of this issue. Before we step away, let's tuck in Jimmy and Gretna, who wants to talk about the River Diversion Project, which is not a thing we're talking about today, but this is a really important issue that we need to keep track of, and I know Jimmy cares a lot about it. Let's get him in here. Jimmy, you're on the air.
Hey, Ian. Hey, I'll make it quick. Great commentary, as always. Yeah, I heard last week in some local story that that Jeff Landry suspended it or it stopped. And my question is it a temporary suspension of the diversion project in Plaquemines Parish or like a permanent termination? And both sides of this coin for the listeners is this diversion project, one side, the fishermen think it's going to do long-term damage to the seafood industry across Barataria, Plaquemines Parish, and beyond. And the other side thinks it's going to build up land by redirecting the river back to its more natural inclination of, with, you know, the levee system and re-diverting sediment and building land over time. And one comment on a federal level, because I know it's more like political astute talk, you know, Scoot talks about that stuff, but you're more hands-on with this stuff. You know, everyone complains about inflation, right? It's a bipartisan issue. It affects everybody, you know, white, black, Jew, Gentile, whatever, old, young, in America. Everybody's affected by it. And everyone fights about its origins. Is it from, like, the bird flu with the eggs, or is it from the tariffs, from Trump? I've told you this before, Ian. I don't think there's a right-left paradigm solution. Yeah. I think we're beyond that for me. But too. My question to you is this. If the currency is backed by nothing, wouldn't that be the derivative origin of all inflation or hyperinflation? Because the more digital currency you create or supply, it's like monopoly money, right? Or watering down wine, turning one bottle into 10 by just taking a water hose and mixing wine with water.
Yeah.
I want to get your take on that as well.
Okay.
You know?
I'm going to have to do one and then the other, Jimmy, just because I don't have a ton of time here. And now is not exactly the time for us to jump into a protracted discussion about international monetary policy. But what I will tell you, what I know about the River Diversion Project, Jeff Landry says, hey, sounds great. You can't afford this. I believe he put a 90-day stay, a halt work order on that. I don't expect that work will resume after that 90 days is up. There are other issues here. Newell had somebody on from BGR yesterday, or maybe it was last week. No, it was both. To discuss, you know, the governor's office has alleged, you know, some of this was done incorrectly and some of the people on the protection authority are there for the wrong reasons. I have to go and look at the detail about that a little bit more clearly. But in a nutshell, it's a 90-day stop work order. I expect it'll continue beyond that. There's an issue about how much money we can spend on this, but it also seems like there's some politics behind it. We'll step away and come back with a few more of your texts before we hand it off at 3 o'clock. And when we come back at 3 o'clock, we will speak to an economist about what's happening in the markets right now. Let me take a quick look here. Okay, the gains that the Dow Jones Industrial Average enjoyed this morning are all gone. We are now looking at down 772 points with just about 4 minutes to go before that index closes for the day. So we'll have more to talk about with that at 325. Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this. Here's a text that says, my wife is now a citizen. She's from the Philippines. We started the citizenship process in 2016, and she received her citizenship in 2021. There was an immigration lawyer involved, a cost of about $5,000 total. It ain't easy, and it ain't cheap. Here's another text that says, do we know for certain that he did not apply for citizenship? Could it still be in process? Like you said, Ian, it's a very lengthy and expensive process. And until we make this process easier, things like this are going to continue to happen. Excellent point. And it brings up another thing that I hear all the time that we should examine this a little bit more. Nobody should be coming here illegally, right? If you want to apply for asylum or a green card or temporary protective status or all the different sort of ways that you can be here, having arrived here illegally. Everybody always says, oh, well, you should have just come here the easy way. You should have just done it the right way. Well, okay. But there are also pieces of legislation to make that happen that are routinely blocked by the same people that say, why didn't you just come here the right way? So there's a lot of hypocrisy and there's a lot of stupidity. And I guess I could probably say that every day for the rest of time, because that's just the world that we live in now. We'll get caught up with news here and get our first look at traffic for the afternoon. Stick around. Don't change that station. I'll be right back. Ian Hoke in for Scoot, WWL.